us, especially for me, it's a goal to make sure that people, you know, as citizens, they have the right to participate in peaceful, clean elections.
In the most recent election, President Nayib Bukele's Nuevas Ideas party and its allies secured the largest congressional majority in El Salvador's history. 39 years old, Bukele has already served two terms as president and has rapidly become one of El Salvador's most popular public figures. He's a populist right-wing politician who has been criticized by rights groups as an authoritarian. Joining me today is Maria Silva, a legal observer of El Salvador's recent legislative election. Thanks for joining me, Maria.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Maria, could you tell me a little bit about your role as a legal observer in this election?
I was invited by my fellow compañeros from Morena, the political party in Mexico, and just to explain how strong is our relationship as Mexicans to the El Salvador people. It's very old, back in 1980s with France, Mexico, El Salvador peace pacts, the peace agreements. Where it recognized the FMLN as a belligerent party. And there has been a lot of solidarity for many years from the Mexico country with El Salvador. Now, we have a new president in Mexico. His name is AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, and he has given a lot of funding to the President Bukele so they can create programs for youth and for people, for peasants and farm workers. He gave at least $33 million. Our president in Mexico, he really wants to work the issue of immigration because, as you know, millions of immigrants, our brothers from South America and Central America, come by the border of Mexico. So President Obrador believes that, you know, one of the ways to fix and resolve this is creating the infrastructure, the funding, the programs, social programs for people in their own country so they won't have to make the hard decision to migrate. So that's the connection, and I am one of the, well, I'm the representative of the political party Morena here in the United States. We have a Morena Oregon chapter, and now we are creating a Vancouver, Washington chapter. So that's my involvement. We were invited to come to observe, to become legal observer at this election less than a week ago. And we've seen what has happened from our Mexican perspective. We've seen what has happened with the OEAs. You know, I think you call it in English. I make a note. OAS with Almagro, the participant that he has had in South America with the Bolivian elections. And, you know, we were concerned about you know, the fact that they are not neutral, that they are not respecting, you know, the processes. So having that in mind, I personally decided to come and bring to Portlanders and Oregonians direct information of what I observe in El Salvador.
Would you describe what you saw in El Salvador as a free election?
I was, as you mentioned, I was very excited to see a huge turnout. At least 51% of the people of El Salvador went to vote. But as soon as we arrived there, we did see a lot of the right wing and also, you know, the president's party. They were doing we call it proselitismo. They were doing a campaign, which they don't supposed to be doing. There was some, it looked to me like they were buying votes. Also, some manipulations like helping elders to walk to the voting booth and telling them how to vote and who to vote with. They also have orchestrated, the president's party had orchestrated this very elaborate, sophisticated technical assistant where they have all these young people, their cell phones, their laptops. They had this huge booth, you know, with all their colors helping people in telling them where to go and to vote. So there was some manipulation, and also there was these huge lines. I don't know who was in charge of organizing. I believe it was the government because they received millions of dollars. They have tons of millions of dollars to coordinate these elections. And we do know that they spent, like the press and the government spent millions of dollars in their propaganda. There was at least $13 million spent on this election just in propaganda. And the president spent $9 million, and then the other political parties, which is eight more political parties, they spent the other, you do the math, the other $4 million. But when it comes to the election infrastructure, the material, the tables, all the things that they need in order to have a fair, neutral election, it was lacking. The two places that we went in the first place, the people have been waiting for 2.5 hours. Now imagine to you, in the middle of the pandemic, you have these millions of elders on their feet for 2.5 hours, because they're supposed to open at 7 a.m. so people can go and vote, but it was like 9:30, and that's more or less where both of these places were able to open. But so people were very tired. And then, you know, the structure was telling lots of favoritism, who can go in and who cannot. The other thing that it surprised me a lot, which it was very incredible that we don't see here in the United States, is the army and the police were in charge of some of the, you know, electoral places. Like you could see, like when we went to this place to observe, it was the police who was in charge of the door and the flow. They were telling them who goes in, who doesn't. Then the army arrived, put their weapons in one of the back sheds of the, you know, the educational center. And then they went to some of them stand in the door for a while. It was just like something just weird to see the police and the army to be in charge. Then we went to this more like a middle upper class where the right wing had apparently won many times, and there was like way too much army. We went in and there was like, I don't know, 40 policemen, and then there was another I don't know, 20 army. When I went into this last place, and I mentioned there was not very good illumination, I asked the Salvadoran people, are you able to see the count, the X's? And they're like, no, not really. And this happened with at least a third of the places. And I said, so how are you counting? How are you doing this? And they were like, we're just using our phones. Sometimes our batteries die. And there was many other anomalies and other irregularities, but for us, it was very important that the people knows we're there. I introduced myself with everybody, and I specifically told them I was just like a legal observer if they have any complaints, anything. And people did come in to me, and they said, well, there is police telling people not to vote. If they see them with this shirt, they were letting them vote based on the color. And then there was a gentleman who said, look at this propaganda. Look at this propaganda. People knew it. People knew it right away. They complained. They're passing these papers, pretending it's like just like, you know, ad propaganda, but it is exactly what, you know, what we know. The people knew. In the places where we observed, there was no violence. There was a lot of kind of like there was an altercation where people, you know, cuss at the police, and then the police is kind of like trying to intimidate them. I cut them on camera, and then the gentleman says, he told me something to intimidate me, and then because you were there videotaping, you were filming, then he backed up. But otherwise, it would be something different. And, you know, we have experienced a lot of fraud in Mexico in the last two elections. So for us, especially for me, it's a goal to make sure that people, you know, as citizens, they have the right to participate in peaceful, clean elections, that no one is turned around because of whatever reasons, that people have the right to exercise their vote regardless for the party that they are going to exercise it, but to make sure that people knows that that there is people from all over the world. There was people from different countries that were there to observe and to make sure that elections are clean. We had also the same experience here in the United States, where we just, you know, survived some kind of manipulation and some kind of, like, you know, what happened with President Trump. Personally, I felt like President Bukele, and this is just my own point of view, there are some similarities, you know, where there is the right-wing party in El Salvador, but then you have a figure who he is like, he wants to be popular. He wants a lot of, adoration, a lot of, you know, he wants to be he, and like Donald Trump. And that was, to me, there was something very interesting. And that's something that I noticed when I went to the country of El Salvador, you know, his amazing collaboration that he has with all the gangs, with all the young people. We read that there was two FMLN, Frente Farabundo Martí campaign, folks that were doing campaign and they were killed on their track by gangs. And that was last month, and there was some kind of fear. It was only like before 7 people tried to start counting, you know, actual votes one by one. And then you can hear this huge amount, to me, was like a artificial fake gunshots, you know, intimidation. We know now that it was this, fireworks that the president called before any results, because, you know, to be honest, they haven't counted all the ballots. I think right now they're on 93-98% of the ballot count, and it's illegal for any, you know, especially the president of El Salvador to call for, you know, victory when it hasn't finished. You have to respect those protocols if we want a state of, you know, of law. But we were there, you know, that was on the 28th on Sunday, and the people have, not even half of them had started counting, because there was some issues with the illumination, there was issues with the packages, with the materials, with a lot of things. And then he was calling for victory in that place and everywhere. And you can hear the fireworks really loud outside, just outside. And it went for like almost 20 minutes. And people got scared. I got scared. I was like, is this gunshots? And they were like, no, this is fireworks. And I said, is this normal? And the Salvadoran people said, no, this is not normal. They are just using it for psychological, mental pressure, to pressure us to finish the count so we can give victory to the president.
What do you think accounts for Bukele's popularity in El Salvador?
Well, what accounts for Trump popularity in the United States, right? We were told by the people of El Salvador, there is a lot of lying, but there is also a lot of money he gets from, they getting tons of loans, tons of money. He has not been able to prove how he spends the money or where is the money. I want to know where is the $30 million the president of Mexico gave to Mr. Bukele, and if it's been used to create those programs that, you know, that they suggested. He does bring a lot of money, a lot of loans. I think they're going to get more in depth, and I'm not sure if the people of El Salvador are aware. There has been also this sense of end of violence. The illegalities from a lot of gangs continue, like they pressure people, they charge people. They, you know, like, you need to ask permission and pay if you want to, you know, be here, if you want to get out of here, if you want to cross here from here to here. So that continues, but in terms of the killings have decreased. And I think El Pueblo de Salvador have been, you know, like, pretty tired of all this violence. President Bukele, we were told that he's making all these deals with the gangs to recognize them, to legalize them, and to give them part of, you know, executive office and legislative, you know, seat. So Mr. Bukele has shown this authoritarian dictatorship-like behavior. We know of the coup d'etat he did in the legislative office on February 9, where he came in, broke down with the army, because he wanted to make some changes, he wanted to pass some laws, and he went to get members of the different parties in their homes to force them with the army to come so he can have a quorum. All these kinds of things is very human rights violations, but we also understand that the El Pueblo of El Salvador wants to have some kind of like economic recovery and also, you know, some kind of peace. I don't know if there's going to be some accountability to where the money is coming from. But, you know, as we experience in the United States, a lot of bad things, that information in all these plans that we didn't know until, you know, a lot of people finally realized what was going on behind Trump. I definitely saw people intimidated to going to vote. I saw a lot of ballots that were like cross or saying like, I don't want to vote, but they went to vote. And I think it's because they were giving them something. I don't know. They broke the law for sure. Many of these political parties, especially the president of El Salvador and the Arenas, the right wings, we saw it, we documented, we have in video. They did a lot of things that they shouldn't be doing. I know there's going to be some challenges from the Arenas, the right wing, and also the FMLN. And also I know that the president Bukele, who has all these different political parties that he gives them money, they're going to be doing some challenges. So hopefully the Tribunal Electoral del Salvador, the Supreme Justice of Elections will, you know, will have a lot of work to do and will come up to, you know, a good resolution for the Salvadorian people.
Do you see a potential best case scenario, or is there a silver lining to the outcome of this election?
First of all, President Bukele has had a lot of money to spend. People say that he is manipulating with money and all. He has orchestrated all these things to have the power, the total power of the Congress. And he may have it. And he wants to change the Constitution, which is something very interesting. Because the question is, what kind of changes, you know, you want to do? Is it that you want to reelect yourself? And what kind of changes you want to do? Is this really going to benefit the people of El Salvador? I think in my point of view, with the left-wing parties, it might be an eye-opening for them to, you know, to understand more how to work with the people, because I know they have very good intentions, and I know they have these amazing historical experiences and these historical memories of amazing things that they have created. And they actually were the ones that created this infrastructure for all these social programs that are in El Salvador. We have in the United States, if we are going to be overseeing or watching elections or countries or electoral, you know, like the way we go into other countries and oversee things like we did in Bolivia, which it was a total embarrassment of the OAS and what we have done in many other countries. If we're going to do that, then we have to make sure that people like, you know, President Bukele is transparent, and we don't have 4 years as we did with President Trump of just, you know, a lot of manipulation, lots of lies, the funds issues, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I think we could learn, you know, to be more assertive when it comes to illegalities, if we're going to demand them to be honest, and, you know, that we also model that here in the United States.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Maria.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate when I say thank you to all the folks in Mexico, in Morena, who went, who saved their money to pay for the plane ticket, for all the people, you know, in the United States who may be able to hear these, to continue keeping their eyes on El Salvador, because we might have a lot going on. Also, we have Bolivia and also Ecuador elections coming up. We invite everyone all over the world to become international observers, and also in 21, if they want to come to Mexico, to be international observers. Thank you so much.
From KBOO News, I'm Ethan Sandweiss.